Welcome to KXRW's Authenticity Matters, where we examine how to live more intentional, fulfilling lives by truly being ourselves. In each episode, we will talk to guests who've transformed their lives, organizations, and the community through authentic and intentional actions. I'm your host, Jen Coyne. Traveling's always been a lifelong passion of mine, starting with a trip to the Magic Kingdom when I was about 2 years old, one of my first memories. It's ironic that in 6 years I haven't done a show about authenticity and travel. Well, today's the day. So this month I welcome guest Brianna Chandler, owner and founder of Elevate Signature Travel. Brianna curates travel experiences that are personalized to your authentic travel style. Rather than following the latest trends, she helps her clients find the trips that perfectly align to the way you like to travel, seeking out special experiences that elevate that level of personalized luxury. After we learn about what drew Brianna to the travel industry, we'll dive into what to consider when planning a trip, how to make it your own, and how a concierge travel agent can help. Thank you for joining me. Brianna is the owner and founder of Elevate Signature Travel, and we're going to hear all about what she does and why and what inspired her. And so I'm really pleased to talk to you.
Great. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. I always ask all my guests at the beginning, what does authenticity mean to you? So I'll ask you that. Like, what is authenticity? How do you define it for yourself?
That's a really good question. I don't know if I've thought of it quite in those terms, but more just being yourself and figuring out who you are, which has been a huge journey for me since starting my business. I didn't realize how much I was staying in that box that I was kind of told that this is how you're supposed to be, get your college degree, stay in the job for, you know, 40 whatever years. And now I'm like, wait, I have a, who am I? And let's figure that out. And it's been a great journey. And every few months or so, it's like, oh, wow, look at where I am now versus even a few months ago. And the things that I'm feeling more comfortable doing, even just the way I dress, present myself when I show up, and I'm not so like, hi, this is who I am.
Right. It's
much more confident, I think.
That's amazing. You know, I think I pinch myself sometimes when I think about where I am and the things I get to do, you know, compared to the life I was living before. And so let's talk a little bit about the life that you were living and your journey and how you got to what you're doing now. Tell me a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and what was your kind of early journey?
I grew up in the Dalles, Oregon. Sometimes I joke, have you ever played the Oregon Trail game? And it's on there. And it's even at a professional show recently, the one guy says, oh, yeah, I never got there because I always died of dysentery. And we're laughing. And then I realize, oh, my gosh, we're sitting with his two coworkers who were from Europe. And they're looking like, what? And I was like, oh, no, that sounded bad. And he's like, no, it's fine. I'll explain it to him later.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
My family did some traveling. Both my parents grew up in Iowa, so we'd go back in the summers to visit. My stepdad grew up in Southern California, so we'd go down there sometimes.
Yeah.
I do remember, I think I was 13, we had a flew to California, then stayed there for a bit and did a road trip over to the Grand Canyon and around. And that was kind of a Chevy Chase vacation type thing. My stepsister fell off a horse and broke her collarbone.
Oh, my gosh.
My brother wiped out on a dirt bike in Colorado and had all sorts of road rash and lots of fun times on that one. We still, just a couple weeks ago, were all together and talking about that trip and all of us crammed together in a van.
Going to Wally World.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. So my mom and my stepdad traveled quite a bit, and I remember just always asking, like, oh, what was it like? And sometimes I was like, they would just say like, oh, it was good. And I'm like, no, I want to know more. But right. as a kid, I wasn't quite sure how to maybe articulate that. Or,
right. Right.
And back, I don't know if they really took a ton of pictures. They'd take a couple here and there and they'd have them, you know, it'd be their, whether it's kind of the Christmas card type
right.
photo up. And now I see some of them, I just kind of laugh. It's like, oh my gosh, look at the hair or look at that
oh,
outfit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and, yeah. You grew up in the Dalles. What kind of pathway, like, were you a cool kid? Were you a nerd? Were you a bohemian hippie? Like, what was your vibe?
I think, I don't know, I took on the role of, I guess a lot of my identity was as an athlete. Because I felt right. like that's, not to be, like, negative. My sister was a cute little one that did dancing, yeah. whatever. And I was the middle child. My brother, we joke, is the chosen one because he's the oldest grandchild, the boy, whatever.
Yeah. yeah.
And I was good at sports. So I did soccer and tennis mostly. I was also in Girl Scouts, and that's actually my first big trips was with our troop.
Yeah.
We all wanted to travel internationally overseas with Girl Scouts. You have to go somewhere adjacent to the U.S. So we went to Vancouver and Victoria,
okay.
B.C. when I was in between 7th and 8th grade.
Yeah.
And then when we were 16, between, I guess, sophomore and junior year of high school, we went to Europe. We did London, a little bit outside southern U.K., then Paris and Switzerland. It was a great trip.
That's amazing. I clearly quit Girl Scouts too early because I think I quit after 6th grade when we moved from Minnesota to California, and so I didn't pick it up then. But I did do the Washington D.C. you know class trip thing. I think between 7th and 8th grade, so I did get that. But that's amazing.
Yeah, I sold so many Girl Scout cookies. And it's really hard when you get older because you know you're not cute and
right.
Like, oh, when, look at me.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So you were involved a lot in Girl Scouts. Sports, your sports, like, did you travel for sports or just like in the region or anything?
Just in
or?
The region. That was kind of before, you know, yes, we come into Portland, but it was
yeah.
sort of a big deal. So in high school, yes, we'd have our games mostly
yeah.
in the Portland area, and it'd be a big adventure. Tennis, you know, there's only, I don't know, 6-8 people on team, so we just do a van, but
right.
soccer games would be the whole big bus. Because you've got 15, 18 people on
yeah.
the team at a time.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stories from some of those trips,
right.
too.
Right. So you got that taste of that as you were a younger person, but you went in a totally different direction after high school, though. You did not go in the travel direction.
No, my parents were pretty, especially my mom's side of the family, like, you were going to college, you were getting a degree, you were following this path. And a lot of that had to do with my mom's parents growing up, they only got to go through 8th and 9th grade,
oh, yeah.
Working farm family. And
yeah.
they were very, I guess, self-conscious about
yeah.
it, or didn't feel very good. And maybe they thought that they were looked down on by others. So like even my mom, I just saw her yesterday and we were talking a lot about her parents and whatnot. And that my mom and her brother and sister, they all went to college. My mom was saying that my uncle had told her one day, like, do you know how proud of you that the parents are?
Right.
Just you're the first person in our family to ever get a degree, and you got a nursing degree, and just great. And I still remember both my grandmas came to my first graduation and
yeah.
just seeing how my one grandma, she was pretty stoic, but I could see that she was really excited and proud of me. And I think even now it's like, when you think about, oh, maybe I should have done this or that path.
Right.
I'm glad I went in it, you know, having that in the back of my head.
That, right. Having that experience, having contributed that to sort of your family, you know, we take all of these things really for granted sometimes, that we have that it's just a given that we are going to graduate high school and things like that. And so that feels good. But so you got the degree.
My first degree was in exercise science.
Oh, okay.
Which I realized, I think I was just not really prepared in a sense for the real world. Like,
right.
okay, I've graduated, and it was kind of like, that's the epitome almost, and now what?
Right.
A little bit. My first year out of school, looking, my mom says, oh, look, here's an ad in the paper. That's how
yeah,
long
right.
ago it was.
Yeah.
Horizon Air needs flight attendants.
Yeah.
And I was like, why not? How many people right. say, like, I want to be a flight attendant and never do?
Right.
Although a lot of my family's like, wait, don't you get sick when you fly? Which I had a number of times. And I was like, well, let's try it.
Yeah.
And it was definitely not glamorous. A lot of people were like, oh, that's so cool.
Right.
And it's Horizon Air. We had 37-seat turboprops, 70-seat turboprops. And it was a lot of, you know, Portland to Seattle, Seattle to Yakima.
Right.
The furthest east I ever went was Portland to Denver. And I was like, that is such a long flight when you're on a small plane.
Yeah. You didn't do the Alaska up in the...
No, because we were, you know, the regional.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
we did go quite a few places in Southern California.
Yeah.
Long Beach was the furthest south we went.
Okay.
So you, I mean, you learn a lot. You meet people, but I was like, oh, I can't do this.
But the travel long. Theme was there again.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So how long did you do that?
Like 9 months, and then I went back to school.
Okay. Because
toward the end of my first degree, I was like, oh, I took a nutrition class. And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. Let's do this. And I was like, my parents will not be on board with me my senior year switching to another school.
Right.
And kind of starting over again. So I was sort of toying with it. I was like, I need a break mm-hmm. from school. So kind of last minute, I applied to WSU Pullman.
Okay.
And got in, and I don't even know if I didn't check my email or, you know, it was back in 2002.
Right.
And all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm in. And I didn't even do the full 2 weeks notice for my job. Because it would have been like end my last trip the day before school started.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, can I do this? And they're like, yeah, you can do it. You just can't use this as a reference ever because we would say that you didn't give the 2 weeks notice. Which at that point I was kind of like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I guess it is what it is. It was a little frustrating because I ended up with a second bachelor's degree rather than a master's they said, well, yeah, you can get your master's, but you have to do 2 years of prereqs first.
Right.
And then after your bachelor's, you have to, it's required to do an internship to even sit for your exam to become a dietitian.
Okay.
And during that time, I got married and I ended up getting divorced. It was one of those where you go, okay, that was
the
greatest decision ever. And just one of those, I think we both weren't mature enough and a lot of stuff. And that was tough doing while I was in school. So I did my internship then in North Carolina, East Carolina University.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He was in the military and he was stationed there.
Okay.
So it was kind of a part distance program. So I'd work in hospitals, clinics, and whatnot during the week. And then a couple times a month, we'd go to the university for in-person classes and whatnot. Okay. So, and that got me halfway to a master's. And then it was like the divorce and all that was going on. It's like, I can't for now and it'll be fine.
Right.
And I just need to find a job and pay off debt and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, that was kind of the
So were you part. Out in North Carolina when you split up or where were you at?
Yeah, it was I did have to drop a class at the very end and then take one when I got home from University of Washington because I was like, I can't do all this. And I had a great preceptor who was like, I get it. I was married and divorced early on and just find a class, send me the syllabus, we'll sign off, and then you can take your boards and all that to get started. So it was kind of a rough time, but we got it. And I did a lot of interviews. Now I know it's really important to do your internship wherever you kind of want to live because then you have the connections.
The network,
Coming back, nobody knows you.
And right.
So I was looking all over the Seattle area, living with my dad who's up there
because
it's tough to live in the Dalles and try to find a job somewhere else. So my first job was in a nursing home setting, long-term care for veterans. And that was a very interesting eye-opening time. I learned a lot about life, I think, and I had some amazing mentors. I didn't realize till later how much responsibility I had and opportunities to really learn about healthcare in general and then people. I mean, I still remember one guy yelling at me in the middle of a dining room, you can't F with veterans and their food.
Oh,
and one of the doctors was like, oh my gosh, that needs to be a banner on the wall.
Yeah.
And I got to see so many diseases and different, I guess, syndromes, whatnot, that I never saw again. Or I'd see them then in the hospital later where I worked, and nurses where I would be like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it's blah, blah, blah. And they're like, how do you know that? And I'm like, oh, I had three of those when I worked. Because I was the only dietitian for 292 beds in the home. And I had one day of training with the woman. I made it work.
So you're just like learning school of hard knocks like every day.
Yeah. And really just seeing how much nutrition or not nutrition, food is intertwined with culture, daily living. And it's not just, oh, you need to eat this way and stop doing this and that. And especially as they get older, it's like they don't care.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's what's so difficult for, you know, when we look at like the obesity epidemic or just like, you know, what kind of nutrition people are getting and all of that kind of stuff. It's habits are very difficult to change and you have to eat. So it's like, how do you navigate that? Right. But I bet you learned a lot doing that job.
I mean, I was clinical technically, just meaning that I'm looking at more the side of what are their labs looking like? How is all of, you know, their chronic diseases, their acute diseases tie in together. And then my nice kind of break is helping develop menus. So I'd be in the kitchen and whatnot. But you have to find that happy medium of what will they eat versus what's kind of healthy for them and the budget side of it.
Sure.
What can you afford? What fits together? So it's a very interesting mix.
You've got a lot of problem solving. You know, it's I was just talking about somebody else and saying, you know, just about how, oh, I know it was a friend of mine who had helped with an event we did. I was like, yeah, he's an amazing problem solver. And I think when I look at the kind of transferable skills that are so good, if you're really good at just being resourceful, solving problems, you know, that triple constraint, yours is a little different, but it's like budget, what will they eat? And what's good for them, like trying to balance that all out, it's not an easy task at all.
And we had a bus stop at the front door, and my office later was near the front entrance, and I'd see someone pizza delivery coming in, and they're like, excuse me, where do I find? And I was just like, oh, this is interesting. Okay, just make note. Because a lot of it, too, was just, you know, like you have poorly controlled diabetes. I'm not, if sometimes it's just like, okay, do you want to take more insulin?
Right.
Or do you want to change your diet? And if you don't, that's fine. We just need to know, and you have to be willing to do the things.
You have to be honest. Like, if you're like, hey, I'm going to drink my soda at this time of day or whatever, and that's their thing, like, then you just have to adapt to that, right? Mm-hmm. I guess now they have, like, pumps and things like that that'll make a lot of those adjustments, too.
Yeah, those are tough. A lot of people are like, oh, it's this perfect fix. And it's like, no, you still have to be able to do, you know, the fine motor skills, put it in, attach it, being able to see the small print to make sure you're dosing correctly. So it is tough. And we were like, oh, I'll just get one of those. And you're like, there's a lot more
like
to it
than
that.
You have to be able to do it. Yeah, that makes sense. So you were in that role longer.
I was in that role for about, that one 4.5 years almost. And then that was in the Seattle area. And then I moved down to Vancouver. Uh-huh. And I was working then acute care at Southwest Medical Center and then in Longview at St. John's. And acute care is much different in some regards and kind of the same in the other. One of the biggest things is people aren't there very long. It might be 3 to 5 days max.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get a doctor, whoever, you got to talk to them and teach them this and that, tell them what to eat. And it's like, that's not really the place for it. We're kind of a quick fix, get them ready to go, and then depending on the situation, go to, you know, outpatient dietitian for long-term.
So is this like, hey, you just had a kidney transplant. Here's how you need to be adapting your nutrition to your new circumstances or something like that?
Yeah, I actually got into, I was working on the neuro unit, which was mostly strokes.
Okay.
And also with my long-term care background, I became, got my board certification in gerontology nutrition. And it was tough on the neuro side of it. I knew a lot about speech language pathology because I worked with two people that had PhDs in neurosciences at the long-term care facility. And so a lot of times you'd have someone come in and they have a massive stroke. And if it's in like left MCA stroke, you're likely going to lose the ability to swallow. So then it's moral, ethical, religious dilemma of to feed or not to feed.
Right.
So they can't swallow anymore. So we need to talk about code status and the doctor, oh no, they don't want a feeding tube or you know that. And it's like, it takes a while to make that decision. So you need to start talking about it now. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting through many conferences with a family of, you know, what would they have wanted? They can't speak for themselves anymore.
Yeah.
You know, look back over the years growing up. What did they say about, you know, going to doctors, mm-hmm. taking medications, and trying to steer them without telling them what to do? Again, at that point, you're not talking about, oh, you need to eat more fruits and vegetables.
Sure, sure. Like, that's pretty significant. Yeah. I mean, I wish we would get, if somebody could take away one thing from this episode, which was totally unrelated to the travel piece, is like, we need to get over that taboo of not talking about what it's like to get old and to get sick, right? Because, you know, I was having a conversation with my family yesterday about this, you know, long-term care. What do you, I'm trying to think about it now. What do I want? You know, do I want to age in place? Do I want to go into a facility? What are the circumstances? And, you know, having aging parents, it's like, how long do you feel like you can stay where you're at? And having a plan so that it can be more authentic to you. It can be what you want, and that you don't get caught up in like this system that's just going to put you down a path that is engineered for whatever they think is best versus what you really want.
Or you just have no choice, whether it's because you didn't plan ahead of time,
whatever.
And I think what really helped me a lot too is my mom had been a hospice nurse for, I think it was like 17, 18 years from when I was like 12 all the way after I became a dietitian.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I had a bad experience with hospice. And it's like, well, is it because you didn't think you didn't understand that they go there and not die, but to be comfortable.
End of life care, right? It's the last phase. Absolutely. All right. So we're still a ways away from Elevate Signature travel. So what happened next for you? You're here in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess kind of goes back to a little bit more of my history growing up. My grandma, my dad's mom, she was a very interesting, worldly woman, and yet kind of sheltered, grew up in South Dakota, and then lived in a small town in western Iowa of like 3,000 people.
Yeah.
But when Grandpa died in the early 80s, she decided to go travel. I think he was a World War II vet and didn't want to travel at all. And so she was in her 70s. She used to start some of her stories with, I was born the year of the Titanic, 1912. And I kind of knew she had traveled as a kid because I remember she had this cuckoo clock on the wall she got in Germany. And this lace she got in Denmark that she made curtains with and was so proud of them. I still have them in a box.
Nice.
Since she's passed. And then when she died, it was 2010, I think, going through her stuff, helping clean out her house, I found all these poster boards with pictures of her travels. And I saw pictures of her at Petra. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, Grandma's been there. And that actually is something that I remember watching the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yes.
And seeing that and thinking, oh my God, where is that? I want to go. And so then seeing that Grandma had done that, she'd been there. I was like, wait, I can travel too. Because so long it was, don't you want to wait till you meet someone? Oh, it's scary to travel alone. And how would you make it work? And it was like, yeah, I need to do this. I need to start. Like, this is kind of a sign.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, yeah, Grandma would be really proud of me doing this. And my other grandma as well, my mom's mom, when she got older, she wanted to travel more. And her big thing was, I want to walk on the Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
And they went, I think, 99, 2000. I was in college. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think I got invited. Actually, I got asked to be a nanny for my aunt and uncle's kids, which I was like, no, thanks. I don't want to do that. So that kind of was the thing that got me going. And in that time, I ended up, you know, I was dating someone and then we broke up and my sister was like, why don't you come back down to the Portland area? Like, you're kind of in social Siberia. I was actually Kitsap Peninsula.
And
it is pretty, not empty, but not a lot going on there. And that was really good for me. And then 2013, I did my first solo trip. I went to Turkey, of all places, not one that most people would probably think of.
Yeah.
First, I watched the movie Argo. In 2012, I think it came out, which the Hagia Sophia, the Blue Mosque, and a few other things were in there. And I was like, oh my God, where are these places? This is so cool.
Yeah.
And started kind of researching and deep diving. And I found a tour with Intrepid Travel, which is a great company based out of Australia. Originally there, they're a certified B Corp, so they're all about giving back to the communities and being environmentally responsible.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun. I did get food poisoning at the beginning.
I mean, that's just par for the course, I think, with some of these adventurous travel.
But we did, it was an active tour, so we did some kayaking, we did some hiking on this great trail that's like 500 kilometers long. We did not do the whole thing. We did it overnight in a little guest house. And I roomed with someone else. Some of these tour companies, they'll let you just be matched. And really hit it off with her. Hannah was from London, UK. Yeah. And she said later, like, oh, I knew when you let me come into the room when you were so sick and you were really nice, even though you felt horrible, we were going to be fine. And she even in 2019, she'd gotten married, and she and her husband had waited a year to take their honeymoon and traveled for almost 3 months through the U.S. And they stayed with me a couple nights and went around. So, we weren't super close kind of thing, but hey, we're coming. Can we see you? And when I last time I went to London, I was messaging her like, hey, what part should I stay? Is there a good website to see kind of what festivals and whatnot are going on? And she was actually in the U.S. at that time. And she's like, darn it. You know, it'd be nice to see you again, but we'd already kind of crossed paths, so it was okay. And then I waited a couple years, I had foot surgery in 2015, and my big thing was, okay, I'm going to get out and travel. It's kind of a reward for making it through this tough time. And so I'd had a coworker who had gone to Croatia the year before, and seeing her pictures, I was like, okay, I want to go there. Plus, I was like, oh, Game of Thrones is huge. I'm going to go before it gets super popular.
Yeah.
So I found a tour again with Intrepid that was Croatia and Slovenia. And then good old Rick Steves, love that guy.
Yep.
I was reading his book and I was like, oh, I could do a road trip for a couple nights down to Montenegro. It's really easy.
Yeah.
Well, there's no street signs or house numbers down there. So even though it was literally turn left out of the airport parking lot or whatever in Croatia, Dubrovnik, and just stay on that road, I get there and I was like, oh my gosh. And they also lost my bag. So, but that was a great adventure. I ended up with my own room because the only other woman on the tour that was solo, she had paid to have her own room.
Oh, right.
So, actually the first half was by myself, and then it was a tour you could do 8 days or 8 days.
Yeah.
And then I had a woman, I was, you know, mid 30s and she was in her 50s. She was a hoot from Australia. Just kind of a wacky, funny lady. Just some of the stuff she'd say, you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But great tour. I kept in touch with the tour guide, and I haven't heard from him in years, but he helped me plan a trip in 2019 back to the Balkans because I just fell in love with it.
Uh-huh.
And then I did do in 2017 then another Intrepid tour, and it was one he had recommended. He said, you would really like Central Eastern Europe, I think. And so that was a Vienna, Budapest, Prague, Krakow, all of that. I didn't have as good of experience on that one. It was more just the people on the tour.
Right. That's
really frustrating. And I did have to say, I cannot room with this woman anymore. She was a smoker and she snored horribly didn't, you know, just wake me up in the night. You know,
that's one of the things to think about, the realities of like solo travel and getting paired up is like, what can you tolerate versus, you know, is not going to work for you.
Yeah. And then there was one woman who, you know, was 2017 American that wanted to go around to the breakfast table to talk to all the Americans and tell them about all the horrible things going on. You know, I'm on vacation.
Right.
I don't want to hear about whatever.
I'm trying to be on vacation from Americans. Thank you.
So, you know, just those little things like, you got to keep things cool and not be like, leave me alone.
And keep things in perspective too. Like it's been hard for me. I went to Paris when I was, I think, 20 or 20, 21, I think, with my family, and I got strep throat really, really bad. And it was just not the best experience in the middle of the night when we were like I couldn't swallow the whole thing, like going to, you know, the healthcare over there. And then finally we did find a good pathway and a hospital that kind of could take care of me the next day. But I feel like that whole experience colored my perception of Paris. And, you know, other people go there and absolutely it's the best, most romantic, most just like, you know, artistic inspired place in the world. But I have that thing, right? So it is so much about like the setting, but also like the circumstances of what you go through. So, mm-hmm. So I'd probably have to push through and go back to Paris sometime.
Yes, it is interesting how you get those things kind of in your head or memories. And
right.
Like, ooh. Well, it's like if you get sick after eating something. Like,
you never want to eat that again. Absolutely.
This is Jen Coyne, and today I'm talking to Brianna Chandler about traveling in your authentic style. We've been talking about Brianna's backstory of her love of travel, leading up to her starting her own concierge travel agency. When we come back, we'll talk more about how to begin traveling in your own authentic style, tips for maximizing your experience, and minimizing the pitfalls. But first, let's take a break and hear from the sponsors that make this radio programming possible. You're listening to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM.
Support for KXRW comes from Kindred Vancouver in downtown Vancouver, Washington. Kindred is a community-focused general store offering bulk refillery options and supplies for sustainable, do-it-yourself living. With a focus on reducing waste and supporting clean, mindful lifestyles, Kindred helps individuals incorporate low-impact choices into daily life. More information is at kindredvancouver.com.
Programming on KXRW is supported by our partner BKB Marketing Agency, your local source for Camano Island coffee. Since 2000, Camano Island Coffee Roasters has been dedicated to roasting organic, shade-grown, fairly traded beans. Through their Coffee Lovers Club, fresh roasted coffee is shipped within 48 hours, supporting farming families around the world through direct trade relationships. To order Camano coffee locally, email bkbmarketingagency@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Authenticity Matters on KXRW 99.9 FM. I'm Jen Coyne, and my guest today is Elevate Signature travel owner and founder, Brianna Chandler. Before the break, we heard about Brianna's inspiration to travel the world and help others have amazing travel experiences. Next, we'll hear more about Elevate Signature travel and how to have travel experiences that really lean into your authentic style and passions.
So this whole time you're still working, but you're yes. amping up, like doing, you're just like, I'm going to do the travel on my own.
Yeah. I would go in May because that was my birthday and it's like, happy birthday me.
Yeah.
And it was just a great way to kind of start the spring and off season, it's less expensive. And I did mm-hmm. a lot more Central Eastern Europe because it is a lot cheaper and your money goes further.
Right.
You know,
right.
I was in Bosnia in 2019 and I spent, I think, one room was like $22 a night.
Wow. Yeah.
And just, yeah, it goes a lot further when mm-hmm. you can do that. And it was still a very nice, safe place. They were brought me, I was like, is there somewhere to do laundry? And they brought me a basket, said, here, we'll do it for you.
Right.
And brought it back with a drying rack and said, it's so nice outside here. You can put it on your patio. And then also here's some little desserts we baked for you.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, really, really cool. And I think people get really scared of traveling, you know, just what you hear on the news and whatnot. And it's
yeah.
like, if you just go talk to people, you'll find they're so nice and they're just like us. You know, I'm
yeah.
walking through parks and I'm like, oh, there's the kids kind of playing tag or whatever.
Right.
I was like, oh, what's that over there? I'll go look. Oh, the high school kids are making out in that corner hiding or whatever. I'm like, never mind. I won't get a good photo from
kids
there.
Kids will be kids. Oh
yeah.
my gosh. Okay. So when did you decide that you wanted to make travel your livelihood?
I was really, I mean, definitely burned out with COVID and
yeah.
it was just really stressful. And I was trying to look at what other things I could do, become a diabetes educator, to move out of the hospital setting, like still kind of stuck in that I have to stay within
healthcare.
This healthcare yeah. that's, and this idea of, you know, you have to have your insurance and the set paycheck coming in.
Right.
And then I did a, I don't even know, sort of a workshop that was 3 months, once a week with this woman named Saya Hillman, who has her own company, is Mac and Cheese Productions. Her tagline is Life of Yes, and really
okay.
living authentically,
yeah, yeah.
being you. She really leans into some of the things that she was insecure about as a kid and really helping people go on the path of entrepreneurship or just whatever makes them happy.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to just be like, this is me.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, leaning into that. So I was, you know, talking, saying, oh, I don't really know what to do. And someone said, well, you really like travel. Why don't you become a travel agent? And I said, you know, I've Googled it, and you get like kind of the MLM stuff.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
you know, American Express phone line, and it's $20 an hour or whatever.
Right.
And one woman says, well, I know someone who's a travel agent. Want me to set you up? So mm-hmm. we had a call, and she kind of explained what she did, how she got into it.
Right.
Gave me direction on where to look to get more information. And I, you know, me being thorough, spent probably 6 months researching and did some interviews with different people to learn more about the business and get into it. And then, and still this time, like, oh my God, can I do this or not? I ended up deciding, okay, I'm going to go with this, what's known as a host agency. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, have my own LLC. I'm in what they consider an independent contractor, but by joining the host agency Gifted Travel Network, I did training. They have a program that's a year long, year and a half, the travel MBA program. So you learn business side of it,
right?
Different travel companies. And they do, for one, they do all the back office stuff. So they yeah. collect the commission and stuff. They do the trainings. And you have built-in partnerships then with different travel companies, hotels. So I can say, you know, I'm with Gifted Travel Network. People, oh, okay, great. There's a level of, you know, professionalism
right.
there. And by pooling all of, like, the sales from everybody together, we get additional levels of commission and whatnot, and extra kind of perks for our clients. And then we're able to join Virtuoso, which is a large travel consortium mm-hmm. That's, I would say, the top luxury one. And I knew, even though I didn't really grow up luxury, that's the where you're going to make money. And being with someone who has that great reputation, and mm-hmm. you know, that's worth its weight in gold.
Right.
Because if it's just
right.
me calling up a hotel, hey, what can you do for my client? You know, like,
right. I mean, you have to have the buying power of these larger organizations. And I think that that's one of the things. I mean, I'm curious for you to talk about, like, I think a lot of people have a perception like, oh, I can just go on the internet and I can just like DIY my whole travel experience. But as an individual buyer, we don't have that access and buying power and just the connection to all of these different opportunities and experiences. So talk about, like, as a travel agent who focuses on sort of adventure and sort of, I don't even know if it's necessarily like high end, but it's like unique types of experiences. What are the reasons why somebody should use an agent versus trying to figure it out on their own?
Not knowing what is really, you know, oh, I got a great deal. Well, fine print, kind of like a lot of Europe is, you know, doesn't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great. But then you're going to get there and, you know, us Americans, we're so used to AC. And it's
right.
like, what is this about?
Yeah.
And, you know, we think, oh, Europe's small. Well, yes and no. I had my mom's cousin like, oh, could I do a country a day?
Right.
Like, no.
So you know how to, like, craft an itinerary that's going to fit someone's style and needs and pace mm-hmm. and abilities. I think I went to Ecuador. I mean, this was 20 years ago, but I went on a tour down there, and I remember somehow I went through just like AAA or something, but like we had pretty good information about what to expect, like the level of difficulty and stuff. But we were with a group of, I think it was a Dutch group, and they hadn't been forewarned about like what was, you know, the excursions, what they were going to do. Like one guy broke his leg, like, you know, right away. And there was just like some things that happened where you were just like, ooh, they weren't ready for this level. So I think if you're a high quality travel agent, like you can really let people know what to expect and how to prepare for that kind of stuff, right?
Yes. So one of the things I do in the beginning is have a consultation call before we ever agree to, you know, work together.
Because yeah.
there's no, you know, I might not want to work with them as much as they don't want to work with me, or they don't really need me because
it's not a good fit.
Yeah, yeah. They really want a DIY. So yeah, they don't need me. I might send them some resources. Say, here
right.
you go. I'm going to send them out. They're going to Europe. They've never traveled before. Information about transportation. You know, not everybody has Uber. What's their local thing?
Yeah.
Train systems. No, you do not need to rent a car in Rome or Paris or any of those.
Like, that's a horrible idea. Do not rent a car in Rome. I can attest to that. Like, just being in a car in Rome is enough yes. than trying to actually navigate yourself.
And, you know, sometimes, especially now with the expense, how expensive travel is, you know, group tours can be great. It's not all the huge groups of 50 people
yeah.
following the flag around. Like Intrepid that I travel with, it was a max 12 people. So you right. really, and finding that right mix of, you know, going through in the consultation, what are you looking for in your trip? What do you want to experience? Do you want rest and relaxation? Do you want go, 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 see right. everything? You know, and you'll get someone to say, oh, I want to see this museum, that monument, whatever. And then they're like, I can't wait to relax and do nothing. And you're like, okay, that doesn't really match. So let's right. find the right thing for you. And even why do you want to go to this location? What is it about that? Especially when someone's like, oh, I want to go to, you know, 50 places in 2 weeks, and, you know, kind of painting the picture of, you know, like one country a day. That could be driving all the way from Portland to Vancouver, BC, right. spend the night, and then you're like driving back, or, you know, similar, maybe it's only 2 to 3 hours, but yeah. like 3 nights in a location, that's 2 full days.
Yeah.
And again, do you want to do just run.
Like, some people are just checking a list, right? They mm-hmm. want to see a thing or go to a place, and they're like, okay, saw that, let's go. I mean, I appreciate having gotten to know you. Like, you're a very no-nonsense, candid person, right? So you're going to tell somebody if they're looking into something that is not going to suit them, right? I think I might have been telling you that for the longest time I wanted to go to Africa, and I was like, oh, I want to go on an African safari. And I had like gotten books on it, all done all this research. And then something hit me at one point, and I was like visualizing myself. Maybe I was watching a YouTube video or something and seeing other people's experience, which I highly recommend, like preview mm-hmm. what people are doing. I'm like, I don't want to sit in a vehicle, maybe swatting bugs, sweaty, you know, other people that might be getting on my nerves in the Jeep with me, whatnot. And I realized like that wasn't the kind of experience I wanted to have, even though like, yeah, I would love to go see these magnificent animals in the wild or something. I'm just like, I don't think it's on my bucket list anymore. But I think sometimes you can get wrapped up in the fantasy and then it doesn't fulfill what you really needed or wanted. So like doing that kind of a consultation with somebody where you're like trying to fine tune that for people is really important.
And yeah, kind of on that topic of romanticizing is, you know, your coworker, someone comes back, oh, we had a great time here at this resort. And I'm like, okay, but they're young, 20 something, you're 40s, 50s. Let me tell you what this one's like.
Yeah.
A good example, I think, like an adult thing. So you have Viking Cruise Line and you have Virgin Voyages yeah. Cruise Line. They're both over 18 only. Viking's average age, I think they say 50s, 60s. My parents travel with them. It's more like 70s, 80s
yeah.
anymore. My parents are like, yeah. oh, everybody had hearing aids and walkers.
Right, so, right.
And then Virgin Voyages is much more, not a party scene in the sense of like, you know, college
right.
frat sorority type thing, but one way someone explained to me, another travel agent, say they have a tattoo parlor on every ship and they have an ice cream shop called Lick Me Till I Scream.
Yeah.
Bring that up, and if they're like, oh God.
Right, that, then you're like, you know, that's not for you.
Okay,
then.
Yeah. They're well known for their food. It's owned by Richard Branson,
yeah,
you know, with his
yeah.
Virgin. And I heard somewhere on a podcast or something that he had made sure all the furniture and everything was strong enough that if you wanted to dance on the tables or whatever, you could, and it's not right. going to break on you.
Right.
So, you know,
so
there's
they
something...
understand the, their the persona of the person that's going to be there. And it's like they're
yes.
telling you out loud, like,
yes.
this is what you have to enjoy.
Yeah. So it's, you know, really making sure, because, you know, like Viking really pushes the no kids. And especially on river cruises, I kind of have to chuckle slash maybe roll my eyes, because I'm like, kids don't go on river cruises
right.
that much, because one, I think 8 or 9 is the youngest you can go, but there's no kids club. It's not, you know, there's no entertainment set up for right. them. Now sometimes travel isn't, not that it's not fun, but I'm thinking about like, okay, who would this hotel be good for? I'm touring different hotels. This next spring, I'm going to the American Society of Travel Advisors River Cruise Expo in Amsterdam. There'll be 10 different companies, I think, with 15 ships. I'll stay on one, tour all of them, have meals on them, and just learn about what, you know, who's their ideal client,
right.
what do they cater to, why would someone pick this one versus that one.
Right.
I mean, obviously, they're all going to say we're the best.
Yeah.
It's just then differentiating what would be best for my client. So it's getting to know my clients, what they want,
yeah.
what they like, and then matching them with the different product or line that I think would work for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, the river cruise, I got to do safari in Botswana last December. And that was really good because I realized, okay, this is actually what it's going to look like. So I can explain better.
Yeah.
Like how busy it is. You're up at 5 a.m. and out the door by 5:30 on the truck.
If you want to see animals, you have to get up really early. That's the other thing for me. I am not a early riser. So it's like, nope.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then we didn't get home back till probably, well, by the time we got back after sundown, because you have a
yeah.
sundown or the drink watching
right.
you know, sunset, then we come back and have dinner and it'd be 8:39 before we got done. And I'm like, this is exhausting.
Yeah.
You have a break in the afternoon, but then we also hit a heat wave. So it was hard to sleep. And it was this, they were these amazing 5-star camps, but it's
yeah.
still tents. And you're like, oh my
yeah.
God, this is amazing. But there's no AC.
Yeah.
So you're
yeah.
kind of dying. And again, you got to warn people of like, this is even
this
at
is
the luxury level.
Yeah. What it's going to be like.
Yeah. It's good to be able to go out and do those experiences so that I can tell people what to expect and, you know, find out what's their idea of camping. What's their, you know, someone said once, ask them if you gave them $500 or whatever, and they had a day or two weekend in their home city, what would
yeah.
what would the things be that they would do to kind of get an idea of, would they go out for fine dining? Would
right.
they go to shows? Would they go to museums? Or would they just go out and they want to hike because they have the time and it's not even about the money? So, yeah, finding that. And then I got really stuck on the word luxury because I was like, that's not me. I don't
mm.
get it. Or I just, it made me kind of feel insecure and unsure.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the last year, I started hearing more about like, what does luxury mean to you? And it is overwhelming for people. Like for me now, luxury, a lot of it is I book a transfer private from the airport
right.
when you show up. Someone
right.
with your name, you get in the car. I got to South Africa and I'm like, oh, there's bottles of water. There's a charging station. I don't have to figure out how to get from point A to point B.
Right. You're not fumbling
and,
for local currency or your credit card or whatever and worrying about getting taken advantage of.
I forgot when I got to Rome to book anything. And I'm like, you know, trying to read the signs.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what's going on? And then I get in the vehicle and I'm like, shoot, do you take card?
Right.
And he's like, cash.
I
preferred.
Know.
And I'm like, how much? And I had exactly 50 euros left. And that's what
yeah.
it was. And
yeah.
so... again, and with bigger groups, I get a family of 4 or 6. Like, you're going to have to get a taxi cab for all of you
right.
figured out. Like,
right.
it's just easier. And it's...
you already have the people that you work with have the relationships with the companies that can provide secure transportation for a group and things like that. Which, so we've been talking about all these experiences. Who is best suited to work with you? Like, what are you really, who are you really good at working with?
I think, well, talk a little bit about adventure travel.
Sure.
So is it, I mean, some of it's people like me, I guess you could
yeah.
say, that want to do, whether it's off the beaten path, like Western Europe is great,
mm-hmm.
great places, but they're really getting over-touristed and
yeah.
they're a lot more expensive. And you can't just kind of, we'll see when we get there what we want to do. You,
right.
You know, you have to get tickets ahead of time for different attractions, or you're gonna be waiting in line for
absolutely.
3 hours. And
absolutely.
Is that really what you want to spend your time on?
Right.
So learning to kind of pace that out and what is a must see so you can pre-book it and then leave the rest
yeah.
of the time open. Yeah, people that want to go hiking, do those things. Like I'm putting together a trip now to group trip to go to Peru, see
mm-hmm.
Machu Picchu, and I'm gonna have the option to do the 4-day hike.
Yeah.
Which I realize for me, I'm like, no, that's
right.
Between the altitude and whatever,
bus. Yeah,
I'll take
whatever.
the train
yeah.
and do some smaller hikes or whatever. And I know other people are like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And that's great. Yeah, and those like women that want to get out and have been putting it off, whether they're taking care of their family, just trying to climb the career ladder, and it's like, you need to go now. Like, right. Just take that jump. And
right.
To make them more comfortable doing that, because you're going to have culture shock anywhere.
Yeah.
But this way, they're ready for it or a little more, and it's not quite the shock that it might be otherwise. Yeah.
I mean, I worked at a place in my prior life that I had sabbaticals. And there was one time I was like going to go on sabbatical, but I was like, I had no time to actually plan it. Right. And I think a lot of people end up in that stressful situation where it's like, I can't figure all this out on my own. And that's a perfect opportunity for hiring an expert to help you.
Yeah. So. And whether you want to do completely solo or you want to find a group
right,
to join.
Right.
And there are tons of women's groups now. There's different cruise lines that really cater to solos.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be totally alone. Or again, you have a family, you're trying to plan for all of them. Like, that's what I'm here for, to take that burden off your shoulders and make sure you can do it.
Right. What should people be thinking about for 2026? Machu Picchu, it sounds like.
Yes. A lot of it now is doing what you can to plan around the busy seasons, because it's just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
I had someone characterize Rome in the summer as like going to Disneyland when it's super busy. So again, depending on what kind of experience you have, and obviously not everybody can take time off in the middle of the year.
Sure.
But a lot more of the, sometimes they call them dupes or off the beaten path places that are a similar look or aesthetic, but there's way less people and it's more affordable.
Yeah.
I went to Albania a couple of years ago, loved it. The beaches were amazing. The people were so nice. The food was good and it was safe. You could hitchhike.
Yeah.
No problem. Not, I didn't just because I was like, I want to get to where I'm
going
in a timely manner and whatnot. And I'm kind of, maybe now the luxury side of me is like, no, I don't need to do that.
Yeah.
I can afford to pay for it.
Right.
But Greece is still popular, but there's like 200 inhabited islands, like Santorini and Mykonos. Yeah, they're great, but they're crowded, they're expensive, and there's so many other great places you could go. And I've been to 5-6 different islands, and they were all unique, great places to go. I've been to mainland, which was also great. It doesn't get the love that it should, I think.
Yeah.
So really kind of broadening your horizons and even, you know, go to South America.
Right.
Another new one is Coolcations. So in the summertime, going to like Norway or more of the northern places, because we're all kind of tired of the heat.
Yeah.
Or you know, all the heat waves that happen.
Right.
Kind of miserable.
Right. Instead of being snowbirds in the winter here, trying to cool off in the summertime. So how can people reach you and start working with you?
You can go to my website, which is elevatesignaturetravel.com. My email address and phone number on there. And I also have my inquiry form that you can fill out with getting started. It'll notify me that you've shown some interest. You know, I ask where you want to go, what time frame, what you need help with planning, and even your price point budget, because that helps me figure out like, that's not really realistic or, you know, and just to prepare me for a call. I'm on Facebook and Instagram, again, Elevate Signature Travel.
Yeah.
Those are the main ways. I'm on LinkedIn. I need to get into it more. I know it's a good place to be, and I'm not as active as I should be.
Yeah. So. What's your parting piece of advice for people trying to create authentic travel experiences for themselves?
I think be open to trying different destinations. You know, you get something set in your head of that picture of the Eiffel Tower, you know, the Santorini sunset, and being open to try different things, experience different things. And also, you know, a lot of people are afraid to travel right now. Don't be afraid to meet people, and you know, it's going to open up your eyes a lot to the world. And there's a lot of stuff we just don't ever hear about in the U.S. History, whatnot. And it makes you realize that we're a lot more alike than we think. And I think a lot of things could kind of be solved by opening up your willingness to go out and see things, being excited to take that jump. And
changes your perspective.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been awesome. I could talk about travel all day. I'll put Brianna's information and more info about Elevate Signature Travel on the Facebook page and on our website. Thanks
great.
So much.
Yeah, thank you very much. I had a great time.
Thanks. It was such a pleasure talking about authentic travel with Brianna and taking a walk down memory lane of my own travel experiences, both good and challenging. You can learn more about Elevate Signature Travel at elevatesignaturetravel.com. Links to her website and other social media can be found at the KXRWFM Authenticity Matters show page or on Facebook. Before we wrap up the show, let's hear from the sponsors that help provide this radio programming to the community. You're listening to KXRW 99.9 FM. Support for KXRW comes from Blunt Insurance Group, an independent insurance agency based in Vancouver, Washington. They provide options for home, auto, business, and personal coverage, working with a range of providers. More information is available at BluntInsuranceGroup.com. Blunt Insurance Group, supporting our community and KXRW Community Radio.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
중도의 nói ngôn ngữ của bạn.
Join me next time to hear more authenticity journeys on Authenticity Matters. This is KXRW 99.9 FM.